Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, education issues before the Iowa legislature. It's Legislative Monday, Mondays during the session. We like to tap into issues that are being addressed by our lawmakers here in Iowa and have you join our conversation. As always on Legislative Mondays, I'm joined by Iowa Public Radio State House correspondent Joyce Russell. Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Ben.
You are there at the State House Law Library with a couple of guests, three guests joining us this hour, two representatives, Representative Walt Rogers of Cedar Falls, a Republican from Cedar Falls. Representative Rogers, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
And also Representative Sharon Steckman, a Democrat from Mason City. Representative Steckman, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And also education advocate Margaret Buckton is with us as well. Margaret is a professional advocate for the Rural School Advocates of Iowa, a lobbyist for the Urban Education Network. Margaret, welcome to you.
Thanks so much.
I want to talk about a number of issues before the legislature, transportation and some other issues. Joining us, I wanted to introduce another guest before we get started in earnest with our issues. Justin Daggett is with us by phone, superintendent of Manson Northwest Webster Community School District. That's in Northwest Iowa. Justin Daggett, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
As I said, a number of issues related to education that our lawmakers are tackling this hour. I'd like to start off with what's been in the news this weekend and since the latest school shooting in Florida last week. To get your reaction, and Joyce and our lawmakers, I understand we have some related proposals at the State House as well. Joyce, can you start us off with that gun-related or school shooting safety-related bills?
Well, on the same day that the most recent school shooting was in the news last week, the Senate Education Committee did pass a bill to require schools to have in place safety plans for when there is an active shooter situation. That had been scheduled for a vote even before the Florida event, but that is now a live bill and is available for Senate debate.
Mm-hmm. And Margaret Buckton, perhaps you can address this. Up to this point, it was for school districts themselves to decide whether they had active school shooter plans, because I know some did, right? Or do.
Yes, and yes, many districts do have those plans. This becomes a requirement for those who had not yet taken this action. And another part of that requirement is to collaborate with local law enforcement, emergency services, and others in developing the plan, and that was not a requirement earlier. I think that makes good sense to use those local resources to help you with that decision-making.
Let's go to Superintendent Justin Daggett in Northwest Iowa. What is your view of this development in the Senate Education Committee? Do you, in your district, have a plan for active shooters?
Yeah, we do. We've had it for the last few years, and we run our teachers through the ALICE protocol and training every year at the beginning of the year, and we've integrated that protocol with our local law enforcement, both the city level and county level. So it is something that we are trained and prepared for, and we pray to God that we never have to do it.
Mm-hmm. In communicating with other superintendents of school districts across Iowa, Justin Daggett, do you get a feeling that this this will be in any way controversial to have an active shooter plan? I can't imagine what would be working against that. Can you, Justin Daggett?
No, I think we all want the safety of our students and our staff members first and foremost, and because of the recent events, not just this year but even the last few years, all school districts I think are forced to be prepared for that, and I don't know of any school district personally that has not taken steps to prepare their staff and students for that scenario. So I don't think anybody's resistant to that at all.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a view from the House with our representatives. Walt Rogers, what's your view here on action in the Senate today?
I would agree. I don't think anybody in our chamber, at least, is going to disagree with the intent of this legislation. And like we've talked about already, most of the schools already do have some type of a program and plan in place. And I've got a wife who works in public schools back home, and I know that she's in training every year. So I would anticipate that bill to pass the Senate and then come over and probably not run into too much obstruction here in the House.
Right. Would you, Representative Rogers, before we get to Representative Steckman, Representative Rogers, do you think this latest high-profile deadly shooting in Florida has given impetus to doing something more legislatively here in Iowa to protect our students as well?
I think it adds to it. I mean, there was already a concern. All of us want to make sure that our students in all of our schools are safe. And so I think it just adds another little piece an idea that we've got to get this done and get it done soon.
Mm-hmm. Margaret Buckton, are there financial restraints here? Is paying for this an issue?
There are always financial restraints in doing something to the best of your ability. So training staff does cost money. I think to hear Justin and Representative Rogers' spouse experience and others, we know that kind of training is going on all over the state, and people need to be prepared for this. It also covers natural disasters, and you've got to have a response there too. But typically, one day of training costs school districts, if you do it statewide, somewhere on the order of $12 million. So it is an investment of those local resources to make sure that this kind of training takes place.
Representative Steckman, to you, do you think it's been said many times and it's never happened that something happens in regards to gun violence, specifically to protect our children better in schools? Do you think this latest shooting, which is the eighth shooting to have resulted in death or injury during the first 7 weeks of the year, do you think we've turned a corner here in terms of getting down to better protection of our students?
I would hope so. I, like many others this weekend, spent time listening to the students in Florida. I was impressed by how well-informed they were, how educated on the subject they are, and they are definitely wanting to take action and demand accountability from their legislators, and they have every right to do that. It hasn't hit Iowa yet, but it could at any time, and I'm glad that this bill is coming through and that my district already does something like this, but to review it and go over it with the staff and the students so they know exactly what to do every year is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll see more happening to protect students, especially with the push that you've seen from the high school students.
Right. We have the survivors of last week's Florida high school massacre announcing a march on Washington and other major U.S. cities next month, demanding some action to prevent future school shootings. Also, reports of organized a series of school walkouts across the country. The White House says President Trump will host what it calls a listening session with high school students. This is to happen, and teachers, on Wednesday. No further details that I could see yet this morning. This morning, the White House said Donald Trump is supportive of efforts to improve federal background checks for gun purchases. Specifically to the point of what's new here is students are getting in. To be frank, students are scared and have every right to be scared. Justin Daggett, is this a discussion in your school district as these school shootings happen on a weekly basis now in the U.S., at least have in the first 7 weeks of our new year?
Yeah, it is. And especially the last week, it's been on everyone's mind, both parents and students and staff members. And I think when, you know, our approach has been when students or parents come with concerns, you listen to them, and you, I think you emphasize again what steps you've already taken to make sure that we're in the safest possible position that we can be. and what they need to do to help us out as far as communication goes. But it definitely is a conversation, and lately it's been the focus of a lot of conversations.
Do you, Superintendent Daggett, would you stand behind your students, support students, if they want to be part of a school walkout or a protest of gun violence?
Well, we always talk about to our kids about thinking for themselves and advocating for what they believe in. So to not be supportive would be hypocritical on my part. But I think that you want to make sure that they fully understand what they're walking out on. So I think you process it with them, and I think you make sure they understand the implications, if there are any, or ripple effects of their actions, and then let them decide if that's still how they want to communicate their view. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Joyce, there have been other gun-related some proposals at the State House as well, not to do with this specific latest school shooting, right?
Well, there is a bill in the Senate that has to do with schools and guns. This has cleared the funnel last week. Currently, it's a felony to carry a firearm onto school property. And this bill carves out an exception for the many people who carry weapons. You know, there are more than 200,000 Iowans with permits to carry weapons. And the situation has been described as you are a legal carrier of a weapon. You get called to school unexpectedly to pick up a child or to drop off a child or some such. And currently, you're committing a felony if you drive onto the school grounds with that weapon. The scenario that's been described is that you have to stop before you get to the school grounds, take your gun, take the ammunition out of your gun, store the gun in the trunk, go do your business at the school, and then reverse that afterwards. Mm-hmm. So this is a bill that would carve out an exception for someone who continues to carry a weapon onto the school grounds, but does so only to pick up or drop off a student.
Representative Rogers, let me ask you first, are you supporting such a proposal?
Well, it's not in the House. I certainly would like to take a look at the bill if and when it gets over here. And the bigger picture of what we're talking about is school safety, not necessarily gun violence, which is obviously part of this whole discussion. I don't think it's illogical at all to look at this bill and say, hey, this could be something that would help make schools more safe. So it's certainly worthwhile looking at. And if there were people who are going to school who have concealed carry, that might make somebody who was thinking about targeting a school take a second look at whether or not they want to hit a gun-free zone like that.
Right. And elaborate on that, Representative Rogers, because you could see this two different ways. You could see, okay, stricter gun control is the answer to this. But gun rights advocates would say this is a way of protecting our students instead of making our schools vacant of armed parents, for instance. Sharon Steckman, can you see that point of view?
Most definitely. I don't think I'd have to see the bill to know that I would not be in favor of allowing someone, even if they have a permit. The fact that you have a permit, the young man that bought the assault rifle in Florida went in and bought it legally. So the fact that you have a permit doesn't mean that you're above the law, I guess I can say. And they're complaining about the time it takes for them to put that gun in their trunk. I think the safety of our children should be way far and above what time it would take them to take the gun and take the ammunition out and put it away in their trunk. Mm-hmm. For that inconvenience, I would rather have my children safe and know that we have a gun-free zone.
Margaret Buckton, your view on this particular proposal?
Well, gun safety research is a little far afield from the things I usually talk about, but what little I've read is that when folks are in extremely stressful situations, it is very, very difficult to use a firearm and be accurate. And that's why police officers and others who are charged with that kind of responsibility have to have regular training every single year, something like 40 hours a year. The parent that has the gun in their in their pocket, finds themselves in that stressful situation, I don't know that students would be safer. They may actually be less safe. So from the standpoint of both the Urban Network and the Rural Schools Group, we've registered opposed to that bill and hope that we focus our efforts on things that we know will have an impact of making students safer.
Mm-hmm. If you just joined
us. Can I just push back a little on that?
Absolutely. Walt Rogers, yes.
Well, and I just want to say what I said before, is it's not illogical to discuss the fact that if you have people who are carrying and they're concealed carry and they have the permit, I don't know what the percentage is, but 99.9% or whatever it is of those people who carry a permit are law-abiding citizens and know how to use that firearm. So, I mean, I've got kids in public school or grandkids in public school, and I would like to know if there's a shooter came on the school that there's somebody there to protect them. I just don't think it's illogical for us to at least have a discussion and go down the road of what's the best thing for keeping kids safe.
Okay. Unless anyone had anything else to add there, perhaps we'll bounce back to it later in the program as it is in our national headlines here.
Yes, I could just add a point on
sure,
that.
Sure, Representative Steckman.
I have a friend that got his concealed carry online, just went down and filled out some paperwork at the sheriff's, and that was it. That's all he had to do. So I'm not sure there's a...
So you're saying countering...
Not as safe as we think it is.
Right. Trusting your child to anyone who can fill out a paper and get a concealed carry permit, right, is not in keeping with an idea of safety that perhaps you have. Hmm? Let's move on to transportation. Other issues we wanted to get to, besides addressing the national headlines and the school shooting here, and let me remind our listeners who've just joined us, Ben Kiefer of Iowa Public Radio with Joyce Russell, Legislative Monday. Today we're tackling education issues with Superintendent Justin Daggett of Manson Northwest Webster Community School District in Northwest Iowa, Representatives Sharon Steckman of Mason City and Walt Rogers of Cedar Falls, also Advocate Margaret Buckton of the Rural School Advocates of Iowa and of the Urban Education Network. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. About 5 minutes before we take a break, let's jump into transportation. And that's also the chief reason we have Superintendent Daggett with us. Joyce, start us off by quickly telling us about legislation dealing with the fact that rural school districts in Iowa face greater transportation costs, and legislators are reacting.
That's right. After discussing this for a number of years, the House has now passed a House committee has now passed a bill to set aside $11 million next year. This would go to the school districts with the greatest transportation costs per pupil, which in the highest instance approaches $1,000 per pupil. Under this bill, that $11 million would be distributed among, I think there are about close to 60 school districts that would get money with this, and it would make it so that this, I think it's $430. No one would have to pay more than $430 per student. This is, of course, as schools consolidate and school districts become geographically larger, and this is a school equity issue. Margaret could talk about this better than I, but I think for urban districts, the cost per pupil is what, roughly $100.
It's interesting the variance there, because like Waterloo is, we think of that as an urban district, but they have lots of highways, lots of rivers, and some agricultural area. So they're above the state average in cost per student. And then we've got some very small rural districts that aren't large geographically who may have small costs. So it really is just that relationship between how many route miles you have and how many students you have. And that capacity of the time limits on the bus. Can you get the bus? Can you go in a circle and pick people up all the way around? Or because you run out of time, you have to start at the extremity of the district and fill the bus up on the way in. So it's not really rural, urban, but we will see those very extreme costs tend to be in the rural areas. Mm-hmm.
Superintendent Daggett, give us your view, because your district, Manson Northwest Webster Community School District, has a real stake in this, doesn't it?
We do. We have a large geographical area, small student size, 750 students, so... I'm just looking at our transportation report right now, and our average cost per pupil transported is $2,083. Now, that's 284 students transported to and from school. But so any type of savings we can get in this area is significant for us.
So just to be clear here, Superintendent, the monies for your school come out of one pot. If you spend more on transportation, which you would have to as a rural school district, you have less for other things, right, compared to more urban school districts.
That is correct, you know, and it all comes out of the general fund, so that's also the fund that we pay our teachers with. And, you know, and another part of this that's unrelated but indirectly related is in rural Iowa, it's sometimes hard to fill open spots, so as far as staff goes, teachers. So when you're really limited in what you can pay teachers, it just makes it harder to fill those really hard positions to fill. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why this bill will have an impact in the classroom.
Does this a one-time help? I understand it's a one-year help. Does this solve the problem for you, Superintendent Daggett?
Well, I don't know if it solves the problem. It'll help in the 1 year, definitely. I think that, you know, talking with our legislatures, they understand the issue and they're committed to helping all rural Iowa schools with this issue, this problem. So, mm-hmm.
Representative Rogers, why were you not able, or why didn't you pass something that would have gone beyond 1 year?
Well, we were looking at our whole overall budget, and every year we have to be very concerned about making sure we get every department the dollars that they need. And so the past several years, our revenue has not met what our estimated revenue is. So it's just a step of being responsible with what we know we have. We'll take a good look at it next year, and we are also considering the fact that we'll put it into a standings appropriation down the road that will be just an automatic appropriation that happens every year. We just felt for 1 year we should take a look at it. Maybe it's the right amount, maybe it's not. Maybe it needs to be a little bit more, maybe it needs to be a little bit less, but we'll look at it next year for sure.
Okay, we have to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a moment with Representative Walt Rogers, as well as Representative Sharon Steckman, two lawmakers on the program today, as well as Superintendent Justin Daggett of Northwest Iowa. Margaret Buckton is with us of Rural School Advocates of Iowa and Urban Education Network. If you'd like to join me and IPR's Joyce Russell as we discuss education issues before the legislature, join our discussion. What do you think of the proposals being discussed this hour? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment with more of our Legislative Monday.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, together with IPR State House correspondent Joyce Russell, talking about education issues today with a host of guests, Margaret Buckton, the Rural School Advocates of Iowa and Urban Education Network, two lawmakers, Representatives Sharon Steckman of Mason City and Walt Rogers of Cedar Falls. Also, Justin Daggett with us for a few more minutes. He's a superintendent of a Northwest Iowa school district, Manson Northwest Webster Community School District. And when we left off, we were talking about a new bill, right, Joyce, that would spend a little over $10 million to buy down per pupil bus costs so that these rural districts with higher transportation costs are given some money because their transportation costs are so high, right?
And Margaret Buckton was kind enough to sort of refine what we're saying about here. In general, it is the larger rural districts that have become very geographically large because of consolidation, but it isn't strictly urban. It isn't strictly rural. Some, like Waterloo schools also, because just of the configuration, also have high transportation costs.
Right. As a former, I myself am a former Iowa City school bus driver 30 years ago, and I spent plenty of time driving down rural routes to collect students and bring them to and from school. Let's talk, Justin Daggett, you are a longtime bus rider as a youngster as well. Let's talk a little bit about, Joyce, there is a proposal here to allow students to stay on buses longer, right? Currently, there's a law that prohibits what?
Currently, the law is that if you are an elementary school student, you shouldn't have longer than a 60-minute bus ride. And if you're a secondary school student, you shouldn't have longer than a 75-minute bus ride. And the bill would sort of push the envelope on that if a hearing is held and parents can have some input, then that can be raised to 75 minutes for an elementary school student.
Uh-huh. And Superintendent Daggett, this would save money for a school district like yours?
Yeah, most definitely it would. I don't know that it would save money, but it would help us maybe recoup some of the costs for transporting those students.
Right. You have to think about the trade-off, though. Having students sit on a bus for 60 or 75 minutes already, that's asking quite a lot, isn't it, Justin Daggett?
It is, yep.
That's one way. So consider that two ways. You're spending 2.5 hours, perhaps, on a bus a day.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah. What do our lawmakers think of this? Walt Rogers, does this aspect touch you in the district in Cedar Falls?
Doesn't really affect my district so much. I know this idea was put forth when Senator Sinclair and I met with the Iowa Association of School Board leaders, and they actually suggested this, and that in some geographical instances around the state, it would actually save a lot of dollars. So I think Senator Sinclair agreed to go ahead and push forward the legislation, and we're watching it very closely over here. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it's something to at least discuss in both houses and see if this is warranted, the legislation, and maybe it would save some dollars. But again, at the same time, yeah, we are looking at a student potentially sitting on a bus for a long time. Are there some things that we could do for them, you know, as far as iPads or whatever, that they could actually be doing some schoolwork while they're sitting on that bus?
Mm-hmm. One of the school districts, they described a scenario where if they made this change, they could eliminate two bus routes, and that's where your savings comes in.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another issue. I'm not sure how active it is in this session anymore. This is Joyce, describe what's going on here. This is a sort of school vouchers, parents' ability possibly to divert public dollars to help cover the cost of private schooling in Iowa. Explain what's been going on there.
Well, the bill that was under discussion in the House would have allowed for grants of $5,000 grants to families to help pay for private school tuition. This would have been money that would have otherwise gone for per pupil funding for public schools. The bill did not make it through the Education Committee in the House last week. It's a concept that's been around for a while. Representative Rogers is sitting right here, and he could confirm that it's probably not going away.
Well, it's an issue I believe in. I don't think it's going to go away too soon in the state of Iowa or nationally. I think it's something that we'll continue to discuss. I think we had a really good subcommittee on it and heard a lot of different sides, both sides of the issue. There was a mom there that came that really spoke to my heart, and she said she was from Waterloo, and she just said, the public school there doesn't meet the needs of my children, and I can't afford anything else. And so to me, that was kind of a picture of why I feel really emboldened to at least continue to talk about this and if it's right for Iowa. I know there are a lot of, different opinions and a lot of different ideas of what the studies say and the research says, a lot of bias and all that kind of stuff. But I just logically, I think it's something that we should be continuing to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Justin Daggett, our superintendent from Manson Northwest Webster Community School District, has to leave in just a moment. Justin Daggett, I want to thank you for being on today's program. And if you had anything left to raise on any of the issues we've talked about or pop in a new one quickly before you left, please do that now.
Sure. I'll just say a couple of things. First, the first topic we discussed on the school safety, I think we've been forced to prepare ourselves in a reactionary mode at schools to keep everyone safe, and I understand that that's the responsible thing to do. Moving forward, though, I think we need to collaborate with the state and local services on being proactive in identifying potential students with mental or emotional needs and putting the proper supports in place so that it doesn't ever get to the point of someone feeling like they have to react in a way, in a violent manner at a school. So I think continued collaboration with all the services in the state of Iowa, including schools, is a good approach with that.
All right. And with that, you had another quick point before you had to go.
Just another quick point on the last thing. I think, in Manson Northwest Webster, we don't have a parochial school. So I don't know how the voucher would and school choice would affect us. One comment I would make is that I think there will have to be continued support if that goes through on the with the private schools on preparing them to support all the needs of students, because I don't know if they're right now prepared for all the additional needs that if they start getting kids from everywhere. That they'd have to serve those kids, and are they prepared for that? And what steps would the state have to take then to help prepare them for that? And I'm specifically speaking of staffing and, mm-hmm. and programs and things like that.
Well, thank you for being with us, Superintendent Daggett.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay. Representative Sharon Steckman, Representative Walt Rogers, and Margaret Buckton still with us. Back to the idea of diverting some public dollars to help cover the cost of private schooling in Iowa. Sharon Steckman, we haven't heard from you on this yet.
Thank you. I was opposed to this bill. We did have a really good discussion, I felt. We had a public hearing and had quite a few folks in to discuss how they felt about it. As far as not being able to afford a private school, there are scholarships. The state already invests annually $54.6 million tax dollars in private and homeschool options. And people already have a choice. They have six different choices. Public school, open enrollment, private school, homeschool, homeschool assistance program, online. So they already do have choices. And I like the way Superintendent Daggett brought up the fact that they don't have a private school in their district. There are 40 counties in that same situation, or 76,000 students. So they would have no, this would not affect them except to take money away from public ed and their resources that they need to run their schools. So I just feel we are already doing something, for private schools, and 96% of our kids go to a public school. That is our first call as the legislature, to take care of those kids.
Representative Rogers, were you not able to get the votes in your committee for this?
It was close, and I need to get it out of committee. I need 12 votes, which is a constitutional majority. I just think there are some of my members, and I respect them all. And so, I usually am not one that's going to strong arm somebody to make sure that they vote the way I want them to. So they're coming along trying to understand this paradigm of of dollars being, you know, going to parents so they can get more choice and kids can have more opportunity about where they want to go to school. You know, we've been in this type of idea for public education and this paradigm for a lot of years. And so I get a lot of email on this and I get a lot of attacks on this. And I wouldn't do this if I thought in any way this is going to hurt public education. I really don't. And, you know, I've quoted some research along the way that says where it's tried, actually public school gets better. And so, and, you know, the opposition is going to quote some other research that says the opposite. So, you know, it's kind of a battle, like everything that we do on the floor sometimes is we give forth our data and our research. And I always just look at, you know, what's common sense with this? And, you know, every time a parent in the state of Iowa decides to put their child in a private school, that saves the state a lot of dollars. That saves the state, the district cost for pupil, and it also saves some of the federal dollars that are going to that whole district. So it's something that, you know, some of those parents are just looking at these days and going, hey, you know, those are my tax dollars too.
Mm-hmm. Representative Steckman is shaking her head.
I do that occasionally.
When I speak.
Oh, not always, but well, when you say it saves a school district money, if this plan had gone through and say a school district lost or another plan with the ESA voucher system, say they lost three students, that doesn't mean that they can let go a custodian or a teacher or a program or any of those things. They lose the money. So I have read about districts in other states that have lost millions of dollars. Betty DeVos's own hometown, the public school, lost, I think, $12 million because of these students leaving. But you don't cut the programs. You don't cut the staff because you lose three students in a class, you know, that sort of thing. So to say that it actually saves the district money, I think, is I don't agree with.
Well, and I'm referring to, you know, every time a child goes to a private school, that means the state's not paying for that kid in a public school. So it actually saves that district dollars. The rest of those dollars then go flood to the rest of the students in that district and in the whole state. So it makes the district cost for people go up.
Margaret Becton.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from you. It's the same thought as Joyce here. Yeah, Margaret, to chime in here. Yeah.
So our school foundation formula in Iowa is enrollment-based. You have to count the student in your enrollment in order for the money to flow to the school. So the way that this bill was structured, it did have a phase-in period. You had to have attended public school first in order to get the voucher if you weren't a kindergartner. So in that case, for 1 year, the school would keep the money because we have an enrollment count that's a year behind. Our upcoming October 1st enrollment date will create the budget base for the next school year. So you still have to pay the money for that year, but the year after that, then the school loses the money. This theory is that you would be able to then redirect that savings maybe somewhere else in the budget, but the $5,000 voucher would follow the student. Because you allow kindergartners who had never attended a public school, and presumably 3,200 of them now enroll in private school already, the cost associated with that and aging those students through the system, even if nobody else changes their mind to attend a private school, it's upwards to, I don't know, $250 million, $300 million by the time we get out 13 years. And I think the public school advocates' gravest concern about this is that we've had several years in a row of low increases in state supplemental assistance per student, where school districts all over the state have had to make budget reductions and staff reductions. So unless there is some kind of a tax increase proposed to raise this money to pay for the vouchers, that just means the pie will be carved up into smaller slices.
Representative Rogers, I as I listened to the public hearing, you know, schools did the basic raise for schools next year is going to be 1.5%.
1%.
1%. And there was, you know, a lot of debate on that, schools saying that that's really going to be hard to adjust. That's, you know, 3 years in a row where they're getting a raise that's below the cost of inflation. Do you think that worked against your school voucher argument this year?
Actually, even in my committee, the people who had reservations about it didn't have reservations about the cost. They had reservations about just the idea, that paradigm. It's a bit of a paradigm shift. And so getting back to those dollars and where they go. And what I'm referring to is when, you know, the private school group in the state of Iowa has 33,000 kids in there. Well, if we didn't have a private school system, those 33,000 kids would be in the public system, and that would cost the state dollars. That's what I'm talking about. Every time there's a private school kid in a school, it actually saves the state dollars for education. And that's what the parents are talking about as they go down this road of trying to educate their own kids. And so, yes, Margaret's right as far as the overall cost. If we did an incremental phase-in, if we did just kindergarten, it would be a 12-year phase-in. And so, again, it takes a while for people to think that, educating kids in the public, in my opinion, is public dollars.
Representative Rogers, Walt Rogers with us, Representative Sharon Steckman, along with Margaret Buckton, finishing up our hour. We've about 5 minutes left. I'd like to bring us back to where we started. We have some listener input here. We started with reaction to the latest school shooting in Florida that took 17 lives, the eighth shooting to have resulted in death or injury during the first 7 weeks of the year. What's new? Survivors, students are planning a march on Washington, demanding more action. Let's get some listener input. Email from Chuck listening to this program. As a high school teacher, writes Chuck, I strongly oppose any legislation that would allow more guns on campus. Our campus has a well-respected city police officer assigned to circulate constantly around the campus to interact with students and to watch for potential problems. Parents walking onto campus with concealed guns should never be allowed, writes Chuck. If a shooter became active and a parent pulled a gun, the officer might mistakenly take down the parent. Mistakes and accidents happen. Let's go to, I hope it's Jaina. Am I getting your name right? I hope so. From south of Des Moines calling in. Jaina, are you still there on the phone? Jaina, are you still there? I'm sorry. Jaina, we'll have to move on. Perhaps Pat in Des Moines is there. Hi, Pat.
Hi. How you doing, sir?
Pretty good. We've got just a couple minutes. Thank you so much for calling in. What's your view?
This is Pat from Des Moines. I find it pretty appalling and not logical that we just automatically believe that teachers should be taking ALICE training, should be effective people against guns and bullets. They are there to teach our kids, period. And they will keep them safe just because it's in their heart to do that. But legislators talking as is, you know, they should be the front line for this is wrong. If we want to have a fully functional education system and we believe it should be protected, then the state legislators should be coming up with the money, the plan, the people, not teachers, to protect these schools. Mm-hmm. You can't intertwine those two things. And, you know, there's a whole other set of problems with that. One is, okay, so we're going to pay these teachers more because we want them to protect our students against bullets and guns. That's not happening. We see how much they value public education now. Zero. Okay. Or 1% this year.
Pat, thanks for your view from Des Moines. We have just enough time to get around the horn here with Walt, Sharon, and Margaret. It seems to me to end with this topic here. Walt Rogers, perhaps you can first be the first to react to Pat or your closing thoughts on the issue we started off and end with here.
Sure, and I would agree with some of what Pat said. We should be looking at all types of ways how we can keep kids safe. If that means more police officers in school buildings, more types of, securing schools as a safe building, we need to be looking at those things for sure. Mm-hmm. But I would push back on, his hyperbole that says that we don't care about education and are funding it correctly. We're the fourth best state in the country as far as increased dollars to education in the last 8 years. We just are.
We have to give 30 seconds to Sharon Steckman, please.
Sure.
Your closing thoughts.
Go ahead.
Oh, wow, 30 seconds. I don't know anything in 30 seconds, but I'll try.
Okay.
We definitely need to give schools the resources. We have not been doing that. 8 years of continually underfunding education when tax credits have gone up 80% in the same time. So teachers, schools need resources to enact all this, and I totally agree with the man that called in. We lost 17 people, three teachers, defending a trumped-up Second Amendment right.
All right.
I just think it's tragic. This is not what I got into the teaching profession to do, to stand in front of a gun.
Margaret.
But they do it because they're honorable. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Steckman and Representative Rogers. We have a few seconds left for Margaret Buckton. Your thoughts as we close
our
hour?
First of all, I love Superintendent Daggett's reference to mental health funding and other services for students. We need to really work on that all across the state. Even though we're fourth in the nation based on just the state commitment of funding, that was offset by reductions at the local level, so we're much lower than that. Still $1,000 per student below the national average, so we've got some work to do.
Okay, very good. So thank you all for joining us this hour. Sharon Steckman, Walt Rogers, and Margaret Buckton. Joyce Russell and I have enjoyed your company exploring education issues. And Joyce, we'll get together on Friday on NewsBuzz, I think, and talk about all the developments yet to happen this week. Thank you for covering all those, Joyce, and for being with us on this hour as well. Thank you all.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
All right. River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, with help today from Natalia Reyes. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about the SNAP food assistance program. Did you know that 1 in 8 Iowans struggle with hunger? 1 in 6 of those Iowans are children. It's according to the nonprofit organization Feeding Hunger. We'll talk about changes to food assistance programs tomorrow with Neil Hamilton of Drake University and others. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.